Artist Jackson Pollock mesmerized and shocked the post-World War II art world with abstract drips and splashes. But one of the artists Pollock most admired was in many ways his opposite. Barnett Newman mostly painted vast canvases of almost solid color with one or more simple vertical stripes. Some called them sublime, others total nonsense. The Philadelphia Museum of Art is offering viewers a chance to re-examine Newman's legacy with one of the largest retrospectives since the artist's death in 1970. From member station WRTI in Philadelphia, Fred Mogul reports.
In 1959, a young artist named Frank Stella went to see a Barnett Newman show in New York. Stella approached a soaring canvas titled Ulysses. It was 11 feet tall and 4 feet wide, the left two-thirds a deep pool of cobalt blue, the right third an even darker indigo. The two sides were separated by a white strip, like a sliver of light peeking through a cracked door.
This experience of Ulysses was different from any of the other kind of paintings. This painting stood straight up in the way that you would, like running into a building. It had a lift to it. It had the ability to both confront you and take you up with it, as though you could sort of sweep up inside it.
As much as sweeping viewers up, Barnett Newman wanted to wake them up, especially the art establishment, and especially after the cataclysmic events of World War II, as he said in a 1966 public TV documentary.
In the 40s, there was a crisis in relation to my life and the life of other painters as to what could an artist, what could a painter paint? The world was coming to an end. And to the extent that the world was coming to an end, the whole issue of painting, I felt, was over. That is, it was impossible to paint flowers, figures, etc. And so those early things of mine were an attempt to start painting as if it had never been invented before. The challenges that arose for me then was to see whether I could develop this into a real statement.
In addition to expressing his feelings through paintings, Newman was a prolific writer and talker, holding forth in newspapers, exhibition catalogs, and at public appearances. He also held court at parties. Andy Warhol once said, admiringly, that Newman was the only person Warhol knew who went to more parties than he did. Still, Newman fancied himself an anarchist, albeit one with a monocle, a bushy mustache, bow ties, and ascots. His paintings also sent mixed messages. He gave his seemingly simple fields of color weighty titles: End of Silence, Genesis. Ann Temkin, the curator of the current show, says viewers should not get bogged down in the names.
People have tended to read a lot into Newman's titles and discuss them at length because it is so hard to discuss what you see. So if there's something to seize upon, whether it's a remark by Newman or the title he gave a piece, people will really almost use that as an alibi for really making their eyes work.
But making sense of a Newman painting can be frustrating, even after making the effort. Stations of the Cross is a series of 14 works, black, gray, and white strips of different widths, painted directly on exposed canvas. Museum visitor Brian O'Donnell says he likes abstract art, but Newman's Stations of the Cross doesn't look like anything he remembers from parochial school.
I'm just at a loss. You know, it looks like some black strips with some sense of depth and a few spots of paint on the side, and I don't understand how he gets from Stations of the Cross to these images. You know, they don't connect for me. But maybe a good critic could explain what those connections were.
The first impression is there's no image at all, or just a line on a flat canvas.
Peter Schuldahl is an art critic for The New Yorker magazine.
Pollock did it by equally energizing every zone of the canvas, creating a sort of endless scan. Newman found a way to do it simply with color and texture, and a minimal figurative and compositional device, which he called the zip, which is a vertical stripe that is too thin to be a shape and too substantial to be a line. It was shocking to everybody at the time. It just seemed ridiculously simple. Surely art must be harder than that.
Some of Newman's peers saw the complexity of what he was doing, notably Jackson Pollock. But the next generation of artists, including Frank Stella, thought the future lay more with the sparse color fields of Barnett Newman than with the busy brushwork of Pollock and Willem de Kooning.
He was a very good example of someone who made art that wasn't popular in any way and was kind of extreme. You know, it just made me feel great, actually. I mean, I was so happy that I was working and that I wanted to be an artist. When I saw that, it just made it all seem worthwhile. You know, like, great, let's go.
Stella and his peers took off, bringing Newman with them. Their work in the 1960s made Newman's widely ignored art from the 1940s and 50s seem ahead of its time. Prior to 1960, Newman sold almost nothing, and despite being the darling of some high-profile critics, others accused him of producing pretentious wallpaper. Hilton Kramer, today an art critic for the New York Observer, panned the 1959 Newman show that so inspired Frank Stella.
A lot of Newman's work does have the character of a tabula rasa, but I prefer the kind of art in which the artist puts something in rather than takes almost everything out.
One of Newman's most famous detractors, Gerard von Blederen, a self-proclaimed art anarchist, slashed Newman paintings in Amsterdam in 1986 and again in 1987. The Philadelphia Museum of Art has beefed up security for the show, deploying electric eyes that seem to be set on a hair trigger. Anne Temkin says the attacks, in a warped way, are what she calls backhanded compliments to Newman's achievement.
You don't get angry at something that you're indifferent to or that just seems boring and you walk past it. I think they have an aura. They have some kind of power, impossible as that is to really describe, that somebody who sees it and right away doesn't understand it or fears that there's something to understand that they don't understand feels threatened, feels kind of taken off guard.
Newman said he hoped to challenge viewers. He didn't want them to look at landscapes or at busy abstract images suggesting action or motion. Instead, he wanted to supply something that could sear itself instantly and unforgettably into consciousness, free of details to examine.
Well, I hope that my paintings give someone who looks at it a sense of place so that he sees and feels himself. The feeling is that you're here and out there is chaos, so that what you have is a sense of yourself. The feeling is instantaneous. Complete, and you cannot ever sort of wipe it out of your mind. If I succeed in doing that, I feel that I have moved in relation to the true feeling of what it is to be alive.
The Barnett Newman Show is now at the Philadelphia Museum of Art and opens at the Tate Modern in London in September. For NPR News, I'm Fred Mogul in Philadelphia.